You'll know when you need to know. Wink, wink. The wink, wink might have been a mistake, and I feel sick. Look, Joe, I can't take a test on a book I haven't picked up since high school without being amply caffeinated. I make an executive decision because I can't listen to him anymore. Forget on the road. Tear up the test. We're done today. He lifts his head up and looks at me like I'm God. Thank you, Joe. I never read on the road, and, well, thank you. He's thanking me for making him admit to being a complete, total liar. Even while fighting for his life, he's lying. I want this kid to understand, and I try. You didn't read on the road? Not exactly. But you put it on your list. I know. I told you to make a list of your favorite books. I know. Unbelievable. Don't you realize you're in the bottom of a bookstore? That you're in a cage? You don't come in my store and lie. You don't do that. Don't be mad. His eyes shift for a second. He's aware of the machete. There's no choice. I gotta pick it up. I cross over, slowly. I reach for it. And I hold it. And I don't face him. You don't want to do this, he whimpers. Before I speak, I spread my feet a little bit farther apart. I occupy as much space as I can. I spend my time making tests for you to take. Tests on books that you say you read, and you didn't read any of these fucking books, which means you wasted my time. And you don't want me to be mad. Do you think the world works like that? I'm a fraud, okay? I turn around. He crosses his legs and hangs his head and runs his hands through his too long blonde hair. He is nimble and weak, and he might disintegrate at any moment. I'm still holding the machete, which feels so unnecessary given his condition. I nod at him like, go on, shithead, go on. It's amazing how you can see money in people. His chick-smooth hands have been softening for centuries before he was born. And his thick hair never thinned from nights in the wind, days bent over shoveling snow or sand or ash. Something about that hair, something about the slope of his nose, proves that life is unfair. In my defense, I love the book in a postmodern kind of way, where I've always sensed that it contains something that I can relate to. I think it's the kind of book that echoes my beliefs and my sentiments. And I've always related well to people who have read the book, and I've written about the book. You know, I majored in comp lit, and it's possible, it's very possible to read a book without reading it in the traditional, straightforward manner. You can read about a book, Joe. Do you know what I mean? Do you understand? Yeah, Benji, I understand. See, I thought you might, Joe. Yeah, I don't have a Yale degree, but my bullshit detector is excellent. Top drawer, even. I start to walk up the stairs, and he rants about what an asshole I am, and what his father's gonna do to me, and then he's begging. Give me a copy of the David Foster Wallace. I'll read it. I'll read it. And then you can make a test. I swear, Joe. Joe! The basement is insulated. Mr. Mooney put his money into making this place a private place. Benji can scream all he wants, and nobody's gonna hear him, just like nobody heard me. And you text. You're funny, Joe. The wink-wink didn't put me on your dork list, and the sun is shining, and I lock the basement doors, and I text you. I got books to sell. Be on the south steps of Union Square. Center. 8:30, sharp. And I shut off my phone. I told you where to be and when, and if you think you're gonna get any more from me today, when you get me all night, you got another thing coming. The day is against me. I forgot that Stephen King has a new book out. Dr. Sleep, the long-awaited follow-up to The Shining. New King means crowds, even a week or two after the book's release. People are lazy. And hordes of shoppers, giddy to be reunited with Danny Torrance. But I want you, Beck. Dr. Sleep turns my shop into a fucking Church of Stephen, and I have no room to think about you, prepare for you. We are inundated with kingophiles, couples trying to save their marriage with a book club. Older fans who have waited forever, young punks who want to check into an independent bookstore on Facebook, freaks who highlight the bad parts and yearn to reenact, with drawn dullards longing for the companionship promised by a page-turner, women who want more out of a book than a feisty fuck with a commitment-phobic banker. Everyone loves King, and I love you. And today I should be thinking about how I'm going to part my hair and whether or not you're going to lick your fingers when we eat. Instead, I talk about Danny fucking Torrance, all growed up. I love Stephen King as much as any red rum drinking American, but I resent the fact that I, the bookseller, am his bitch. You're an MFA candidate, and we might talk literature tonight. For all I know, you could be so nervous that you collapse into a fog of pretension and praise a crap-infested chapbook of experimental narrative. And what am I going to say in return? Can you believe Danny Torrance is all grown up? Books don't get any more commercial and anti-chap than Stephen fucking King, unless you want to talk about Dan Brown. But you can't compare the two because Dan Brown's not literary. And if Mr. King were here, he would be on my side. He knows that first dates require effort. He also likes books other than his own, and he'd be proud of these folks if they read something they didn't hear about on Good Morning America, but not a chapbook of experimental narrative. Plus, Mr. King owes me. I sell his fucking books. Of course, he's not here, and the sun loiters still, and the register is tired, and I've had the same conversation 85,000 times today. Did you see the review in the New York Times? I sure did. Can you just wait to read it? Jack Nicholson was so scary in the first. Philistines, and I smash the register when it gets stuck, again, and I hit it because time is moving too slowly. I miss you, and I want you, and finally here's a woman who's not buying Stephen King. She's buying Rachel Ray cookbooks, and she acts like I hit her, not the register. She does the passive-aggressive sigh and starts pounding at her Twitter app on her phone. Bad customer service is the worst. Hashtag Moni Rare. She wants me to see, and she lets the cursor blink, and okay, lady, okay, I apologize for my ill manner, and tell her that Rachel Ray is underrated, and she deletes her tweet, which is good. There comes a point when the universe needs to get on your side or go fuck itself, and the universe gets in line. I take a moment to send a tweet from Benji's account. Home soda and absinthe? Yes, hashtag 5 o'clock somewhere. The next asshole is rummaging through his wallet for his credit card to buy his Stephen King so he can, fingers crossed, read about a sicko doing sick things because he's too much of a pussy to do all the sick things he wants to do. Things he's probably wanted to do since he was a kid. That's the problem with this never-ending centipede of lemmings, Beck. You know they're all pussies, each and every one of them. They buy these books to get scared because their lives are too easy. How pathetic is that?
They say the ending is amazing and you can't see it coming.
Yes, they do. Is that cash or charge? You think Benji was a tough dude today? Well, try having the same conversation over and over while Benji's in the cage trying to dig his way to China. Yeah, you put up with his bullshit, Beck, but did you ever lock him in a cage and listen to him bellyache 24/7? The kid is allergic to gluten and peanuts and yeast and dust and sugar and Visine. I got him a Reese's peanut butter cup and he went batshit on me and said the mere smell of peanut butter could kill him. Please. You know what the fucker is really allergic to? Real life. I'm doing the kid a favor. When he gets out of here, he's going to be pissed about being locked up, but he's also going to thank me for making him into a man. I own every book Stephen King has ever written. That's great. That's something to be proud of. But did you read them, fuckface? And honestly, Beck, do you know how hard it is sleeping at the shop just in case Mr. Mooney does a late night drop by to look at the 70s porn in the basement? Answering questions about Stephen fucking King while knowing that I gotta buy apples and honey for the pansy in the cage, I gotta pray the whole time I'm out with you tonight that Curtis is too stoned to be curious and try and get downstairs, that Mooney's too old and lazy to want his porn. Beck, I love you. I do. But you don't know from problems. I gotta be aware of the distant possibility that I leave and Curtis takes over and one random old dude with bank decides that today is the day he coughs up $6,000 for a signed Hemingway and Curtis calls Mooney and Mooney limps over here and the three of them go downstairs and make the worst day of Benji's life into the best day. I have problems. Real ones. Can you believe all these people? I thought I was the only one who buys paper books anymore. Nobody buys paper books anymore, I say to customer number 4,356, who was a carbon copy of number 4,343 and all the others, unless they're by Stephen King. You think you have problems? I know what you got. Even with Benji in the cage, I know. You've got deadlines, and you gotta read the shitty stories by other wannabes in your classes, and you think your hairdresser fucked up your hair, and Hannah thinks she's pregnant, even though the dude barely got it in, and Lynn says if she got pregnant, she'd move home and have the baby, and you say if you got pregnant, you'd name it hashtag anything but Benji, and your friends are sick of you bitching about Benji, using any excuse to bring up his name. I mean, really, Beck. Girls. Somehow it takes you 52 emails to figure out the most basic, simple shit. Hannah is not pregnant, which makes sense, given that she didn't full throttle fuck anyone. Lynn is dead inside. You are not over Benji, but you will be once you go out with me. Okay, you have one legitimate problem. Your mom emails you drunk at night, sad, wants to talk, wants to yell, but Beck, if you knew what I put up with for you, you wouldn't spend so much time moaning about your problems. And you'd read the stories you gotta read for grad school and cuddle up with your green pillow and thank God that you don't have a 160-pound princess locked in your basement asking if the chicken in a fucking sandwich is free range. I mean, he was kidding, right?
Don't you just love Stephen King?
Who doesn't? He's not stupid, I'll give him that. He read my face and he didn't like it, but he ate the chicken sandwich. And you know what? He didn't puke after, but he's a nervous wreck and a slob, and he misses the toilet when he pisses, and twice he has vomited all over the toilet. And twice I've had to cuff him to the cage and clean up his mess. Labor is cleaning up a pansy's fluids after you just restock the shelves and the window display with the new Stephen King for the third time in one fucking day while dealing with all the people who worship Stephen King bombarding the store for the big new Stephen King book that they all need on the same fucking day because God forbid they open their eyes to a lesser known author. People. What can you do, right? My phone buzzes and it's 6 p.m. and it's official. The only books I sold today besides Stephen King are those Rachel Ray cookbooks, and no wonder Benji never read any of his favorite books because most people don't read anymore. And this is not the way I want to be when I'm less than 3 hours away from sitting with you on the steps.
They say this is his best book yet.
Let's hope so. Curtis will be here in 10 minutes because he's supposed to get here at 6, and he's never been on time because he's part of Generation Benji. All busy with his fake life and his fucking gadgets, Tinder, OkCupid, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, Vine bullshit, narcissism, incorporated online petitions, fantasy fucking football. I'd love to fire him, but he respects me. So I let him stay, even though he asked me to hold a Stephen King book for him and listens to Eminem through unnecessarily giant headphones and takes like a year to read a single fucking book. Did you read this yet? It just came out today. Well, they must ship them a day early, though. You can't tell me you didn't read the first chapter. No, I didn't read the first chapter. Is this going to be cash or charge? I wait. The after-work depressed book buyers are coming steady, going home to their dungeons to let Stephen King distract them from their pathetic, lonely lives. We're so lucky, Beck. So much of America, Benji included, because I'm a nice guy and I gave him one before I took off, is going to be hunkered down reading Stephen King tonight, but you and I are going to be out living our own lives together. I pity these people. Do you mind if I run over and grab another book? Actually, we've got a line, and I already ran your card. And there's no way I'm pissing off everyone so this broad can buy some Candace Bushnell because she is so slow to realize that she doesn't like Stephen King. She's only buying it because of the crowds. It's the original virus, this kind of shit. 6:06 now, and I know what you're doing. You're smearing on that eyeliner to get that Olsen twin eye you think you need to look hot, which you don't. You're blasting your Bowie, rare and well done. The music you play before you go on a date. Music that makes you feel cool. Crutch music you can talk about when you feel insecure. And you're deciding which little tank top best accompanies which little bra, and eventually all of it gets to you and you're on your green pillow because the only way you get bedhead is to get in the bed and fuck yourself. It's true what they say about you chicks being dirtier than us dudes. You are. I'm still keeping up with your emails as I wait for credit cards to run, and you girls email each other about your bodily events. It's all so un-Victorian. You are a Bowie girl, futuristic in your clinical control of your skin and your eyelashes you get sewn on in Chinatown, so crass that you tell your friends you're gonna rub one out before our date. Rub one out.
Excuse me?
Are you all set?
Yes, can I have a bag for the book, or are you gonna charge me extra?
608. And the next dude in line is buying the new King and The Shining, just to be bold. He calls The Shining a prequel, and I want to cut his face. And what an awful world it is out there, Beck. What a miracle that you came in here so happy when most of the people who come in are so miserable. Everyone except for you and me and Curtis, who holds the door for Mr. Shining and starts with his bullshit. Dude, the L train is whacked. Take over the register. 15 minutes I stood there, nothing. It's nothing but Stephen King tonight, so you can close when the last copy goes.
Cool, but like, I just really need the hours?
611. And the punk wants hours, and it's a waste of my time, and I gotta get hot for you, and clean for you, and close my paper cuts, and brush my teeth with my new Tom's Natural Toothpaste, thanks Benji, and I clench my jaw, but Curtis is dense and not good at reading faces, because of the way his head is shoved in his phone most of the time. Just close up after the King is done.
Yeah, the city can blow me if it can't even get a train to run on time, you know, brother?
Just try and text if you're gonna be late next time.
You look beat, son. Go on, I got this.
The little Beastie Boy motherfucker was late, and I'm his boss, and he is calling me son? And the last thing in the world I need is this little shit telling me I look tired. You got a line, Curtis, I say, and when I walk outside, away from the basement, away from the books, I smile at nothing, at the idea of you, like me, preparing. You're probably on your green pillow. Because it's almost time, and for the first time in a long time, I head home with drippy Simon and Garfunkel in my head, because it's not Stephen King book day anymore, Beck. This night is ours.
Chapter 11. I don't get home until 7, and I'm not out of the shower until 7:15, and I stub my fucking toe on one of my typewriters, and there's blood, but I won't see this as an omen. The typewriter, Hector, an 82 Smith Corona I found in an alley off Bushwick, was in the way. But I'm nervous, and maybe a little bloodshed's good for the nerves, and fuck, maybe Hector's nervous too. You'll meet them all soon, Beck, all the typewriters I collect, because one day, the computers will all blow up, and I'll be the man with 29 and counting beat-up machines, and everyone will be standing in line to get into my apartment and buy one. Because obviously, one day, the world is gonna reverse, and I'm just waiting. You like that movie with that guy who pulls a rickshaw around Canada? And that dude's mostly about the white t-shirt, so I'm going for a classic white V-neck tee and jeans and the belt I found at the Army-Navy store. The buckle is big, but not in a bullshit Ryan Adams kind of way. It's the real deal, and it's old and dented, and you're gonna want to touch it when you see it because it's just like the one the cowboy in your story wears. I get onto the subway, and I text you. Running a little late. You text me right back.
Me too.
The road goes by in a slow flash because I'm not really on this train. I am so excited to see you that the world doesn't even exist right now. I get off the train and send a tweet from Benji. I'd fuck Miley Cyrus. For the record, hashtag deep thoughts. And I'm done with my work. And the air is perfect, and when I arrive in Union Square, I hide behind a kiosk and watch you arrive at the steps and look around for me and sit down and wait for me. It's 8:35, and you were lying. You weren't running late. You were just as excited as me. I text you. Sorry. Be there by 8:45. And I watched you text me back.
No worries. Me too. See you at 8:45.
You care what I think, and you're nervous, and I'm nervous, and at 8:52, I take my first step toward you, and I can hear my heart in my throat. I can't believe it's happening. Us. Together. You see me coming, and you smile, and wave, and you stand up to greet me, and you look so fresh, and clear-eyed, and ready, and you bite your lower lip, and you smile with every part of your body, and you play. You're late, mister. Sorry about that. You can't stop smiling. And I let you wait the right amount of time where you think I'm cool, not rude. And you take a deep breath and look up and then down. You also said we'd go somewhere when it got dark and, well, it's already dark out. I know, I say. And I sit down and pat the concrete and you plant your sweet little buns beside me. This is nice. This is it, and I deliberately waited until it was dark to walk up to you. You are a woman, and I am a man, and we belong in the dark together, and you smell good. Pure. I like this. You really should try cleaning your shoes once in a while, you say, and you tap your ballet flat into my brand new white Adidas. That's why I was late, I say. Had to shine these puppies for an hour. You laugh. We fall into talking so easily about Paula Fox and sneakers and the weirdo homeless dude who's talking to a trash can. There is chemistry. We win. We've been on the steps I don't know how long, but there's no rush to go. You like it here. You like to be on display. And whenever there's an unexpected silence, we joke about my sneakers. Now those are seriously white, like Ben Stiller white, you laugh. Yeah, I'm going to tell my shoeshine man you said so. Well, I should hope so. He did a bang-up job, Joe. You said bang, and you said Joe, and that has to mean something. It does. I tipped him, I say, and you start telling a story about accidentally stealing shoes from an outlet, and we've been on the steps for almost 20 minutes, and you're so nervous and excited that you keep talking about shoes as if you have to keep talking about shoes or you might jump me right here on the steps. I chose this spot because my whole fucking life I've walked by these steps and seen couples that make me feel alone, rejected. And now there are loners passing by you and me, jealous. And you're still talking, and fuck, it's hard to listen when I can smell your body wash. So I'm like, I didn't steal these, I accidentally kept them on. I mean, who steals from a shoe store on an island, right? A very brave and lovely lady who goes by the name Beck, apparently. I said lovely, and you smile, and it was just right. You think I get you, and all my reading was not for nothing. You must think I'm a psycho, you say. Why did I even tell you that story? Because it's a first date. Everybody has an anecdote they tell on a first date. It's always funny, and it's always based in truth, but it's always a half-truth. So I'm a lying bitch, you say, and then you smile, and you cross your legs, and even though you're in jeans, two motherfuckers check you out as if they can see through denim. New York. No, I say, you're a thieving lying bitch. You laugh, and you blush. And I laugh, and you stretch, and you're in your red bra, and your white tank, and your Thursday night jeans, and your pink cotton panties teasing me as you reach for the sky, and uncross your legs, and lay back, and rest your little head on the cement, and I want to mount you right here on these steps, at this inappropriate hour, in front of the motherfuckers checking you out, and the Rasta hawking hemp bracelets, and the angry bitches going home to read Dr. Sleep on their iPads. I want you here, now, and I can't get up when I'm this hard. You seem young, you say. And just like that, I'm soft. Huh? No, don't get upset, Joe. That came out wrong. Good, because I just turned 17, and I'd hate to think I look 16, because then you'd look like a pedophile, and that's no good. You slap my leg, and you like me more all the time. And you hunch, you bite your lip the way you did at your reading, when you're about to make a little revelation. I just mean that a lot of my friends are in a rush to be settled, you say. They seem old to me sometimes. Like they lost that thing, that openness that makes a person seem young. How much weed did you smoke before you got here? I get what I wanted. Another light slap, and I love to make you laugh. And I love you for giving me what I want without losing your focus. Like a laser beam, you go on. See, I started to feel old my junior year of college. I was going to go to Prague, and I backed out at the last minute, and a lot of my friends... They made me feel old, like I'd missed out on something I could never get back. As if Prague was going out of business, as if that was it, forever, as if you have to be in college to go abroad. We could go now, I say, and my joke isn't funny, and please stop talking about college because it makes me lose my game. Anyway, my point was that you have a young vibe. It's good. Like anything is possible, and we could still theoretically run for president, or learn sign language, or visit every castle in Bruges. All I heard was we, and I smile. You want to gas up my NetJet? I'm serious, you say, and you move your body closer to mine. What about you? What did you want to be when you were little?
A rock star, I say. And I follow your lead and lean back, closer to you, and now we're both looking up at the sky. I bet we look great from above, lit by stars in love. When I was little, I wanted to be a singer, you sigh. Is that why you like Pitch Perfect so much? You turn your head and sit up. I fucked up. How do you know I liked that movie? I was just guessing? Fuck. I know it's really popular.
Huh,
you say, and fuck. Do you like that movie, Joe? I don't know, I say, and I'm beat red and fucked. I haven't seen it, but if you like it, I mean, it's probably good. Note to self, you say, and you're not looking at me. Become less predictable. You don't say anything, and I don't know what to say, and fuck that Anna Kendrick, it's on her. I can't tell if you feel bad about yourself or creeped out by me. How could I be so careless? I worked so hard to prepare, and I blow it on a movie? When you finally look at me, there's new sadness in your eyes, and it's my fault. I did that. And there's only one way to fix it. You're not predictable, Beck. You're just on Facebook. So you're stalking me, you say without a trace of sadness, and you smack my leg. You like me. You do. Well, I wouldn't call it stalking, I smile. It's not like it's private or anything. You laugh and smack me again, and you stand up and stretch your arms above your head. I see your belly button, and I like looking up at you, and we both know that you liked being looked at, and you stretch this way and that way and slap your hands on your hips. Did you look at all my pictures? Only a couple hundred, you know, just the ones from last weekend. You hang your head and wave your arms. No, I don't want to be predictable Facebook girl with her whole life out there. That's not your whole life. It's really not. You save a lot of that shit for Twitter. You slap my knee and you like it, and I like it, and skaters pass by, and a toddler screams about chocolate ice cream, and a hippie plays a banjo, and a gainfully employed cunt in heels is talking too loudly on her phone. All of it is for us, and your voice lowers. I looked for you. Yeah? I was gonna look at your pictures, but you're not on Facebook. I used to be, I lie, but I burnt out on it. Some people, it's like they care more about their status updates than their actual lives. So true, you say. One of my best friends is like you. Big time anti-Facebook. I'm not real anti. Well, you're not on it. I know that you're talking about Peach. And now you think I'm like Peach and nobody likes this Peach, so this is a bad thing. I panic. I get quiet. The toddler is silenced by chocolate ice cream, and the wind is picking up, and it's getting darker, darker by the second, and the skateboards land hard, and you want to look at your phone. I can feel you wanting to tell your friends, this guy I'm with just announced that he stalked me on Facebook. That is all. So you want to eat something or what? I say. I stretch and remind you that I got biceps, and I'm ready to kill anyone who dare to look at you. Or what? I figured you'd want to eat something. I don't have an or what lined up. Do you ever notice how many words we waste? Yeah, I say, and I almost mention you and Hannah and Lynn's bullshit talk about hate-watching New Girl, but I catch myself. I want to be more careful with my words and only say what I mean. Cut the fat out. Yeah, I say, I get that. So yes, I want to eat something. I stand up and offer my hand, even though you don't need it, and you take it. You first, I say, and you know I want to watch your ass as you walk down the steps. What are you in the mood for?
I'm flexible, you say, and you look back.
As long as it's near my place, because I have to be up early tomorrow. We've had corner bistro burgers and fries and the vodka and the whiskey, and I let you steer the conversation. You did tell me about Benji. My druggy ex, I push him away, but he always comes back. But let's not talk about that. I agreed. I'm agreeable! And we moved on to your childhood, yours on Nantucket, mine in Bed-Stuy, your defensiveness about being a townie, my prepared knowledge of your island, which impresses you because I've never actually been there. You exclaim, Joe, you're so smart. You'd almost think you work in a bookstore. You reference college often, Ivy League bullshit, and Yale guys. Finally, you're lit enough to ask me what you really want to know. When did you graduate? I didn't, I say. I didn't even start. You nod. You are never around guys like me. I start to laugh.
You start to laugh. I am never around girls like you, and I start another round of who's read more books. I win again, and you are flabbergasted.
Sorry, you stutter. I feel almost rude saying this, but you didn't go to college, and you're probably more well-read than half the people in my workshop. It's insane.
I darken. Don't tell the kids at school. You smile and wink, and we have a secret. I know how to talk to you, and I fucking killed it. And the proof is that we're the last ones here, and you understand why I insisted we sit in the way back. We've got the room to ourselves. We're at a foretop, and the other tables are cleaned up, and the chairs are stacked on the tables. You sit against the wall, and I face you. You look to the left, to the right, and then at me. You ask me for permission to lie down on the bench, but I have a better idea. You could do that, I say, or I could just take you home. You slow blink on purpose, and you sass. And then what? Whatever you want, Beck. You grin. So, you're a gentleman? I don't answer that, and you're shy and drunk at the same time. The irony of your intentionally chalky eyes is that the more you drink, the more you rub your eyes, and the more you rub your eyes, the less you look like a brunette Olsen twin, and the more you look like you. Lie down, I command. Yes, sir, you say, and your cheeks flush, and your nipples harden, and your panties are soaked right now. You lie down. I want to grab onto you, but there's no way I'm even kissing you tonight. Put your hands on your head. Are we playing Simon Says? No, I say. And imagine if we fucked in here. Imagine. The air smells like beer and bacon and Murphy's oil, and I breathe it in, and you put your hands on your head, and there is a God, because a little old Bowie plays now, and you smile, and I watch you smile, and think about you naked, and because I'm a little drunk, I stand up, and you hear my chair move, and you open your eyes. Close your eyes, Beck. You do what I say, and you speak.
I was just gonna tell you about this album.
I don't want to know about this album, I say. This is me training you, to treat me special. I'm not some Ivy League asshole who's gonna respect you because you know about an obscure David Bowie album, and I sure as hell ain't gonna let you tell stories you told Yale guys. You're mine now, and you'll do as I say, and Bowie sings about strangers coming, staying, and you murmur along to prove that you know the words. What a horrible time you've had with the Benjis of the world who care about shit like that. I walk around the table and sit right next to your head. You giggle and keep your eyes closed, and you're not murmuring anymore, and you're throbbing with want. I slouch and kick my feet up on a chair. My cock is inches from your head and your mouth, and you can smell it, and your little nostrils flare, and you swallow, nervous, and I look down at you with your eyes closed and your mouth just slightly open as Bowie crows as if humans are a letdown. He sure wasn't singing about us, Beck. This is nice, you say, before the song is over. Maybe they'll forget we're here and lock us in. Yeah, I say, and fuck it if my brain doesn't go right to Benji. I want to stay with you forever, and yet I have to feed my new pet. Even locked up, he's getting in the way of us. Hey, you say. Your eyes are wide open, and the song ended, and it's Led Zeppelin now. Too loud for where we are, and you know how to give an order. You learned from friends who grew up with maids. Walk me home. Yes, miss. We walk two blocks without a word. Both of us have our hands in our pockets as if they have to stay there or else. We're both too turned on to make small talk, and the night is quiet down here. And there's nobody around. And we reach your stoop, and you walk up two steps so that we're standing face to face. But I would know that you've done this before, even if I hadn't seen you do this with my own eyes. This is your bullshit game. I'm not gonna kiss you, Beck. You're not gonna tell me what to do with your body. This was nice, you purr. Yeah, I say, no purr. You got an early morning, so you better get in there. Conflict suits you, Beck. You see a high school graduate who, in theory, should be trying to jump your bones. You also see a guy who's read more books than everyone in your workshop. I rock your world, and I won't kiss you, and you nod. What choice do you have? You're pissed, and your green pillow's gonna take a fucking beating tonight, and you're gonna think about me, and you're gonna wait for it, and get sick with want for it, for me, The same way that toddler screamed and waited for his ice cream. The same way America waited for Stephen King and I waited for Curtis and Benji's across town waiting on me. You're gonna wait. Sweet dreams, Beck. You want a water for the road? You say while you're standing at the door and holding it open. Your invitation to come inside. Your last attempt. I'm all right, I say, and I don't look back. You are fucking obsessed with me. And honestly, I'm kind of relieved that I gotta deal with Benji and his organic apples and club soda right now, or I might follow you inside and wait for you to unlock the door and throw you onto the couch and give you what you want, what I want. But no. You will give me water, but not a fucking plastic bottle as I'm hitting the road. When you quench my thirst, it will be after our first fuck, in your bed, and you will bring me a glass of water, and we will share the glass, and it will be the first of many. I don't have the strength to turn you down when I want you so bad, but I do have a pansy in the cage. Fucking Benji. A savior. Who knew, right? I smile all the way home. And at home, I tell my typewriters about the night, and I rub one out in your honor, and shower and slather up in Kiehl's, and download Bowie's Rare and Well Done so I can listen to it on my way to the shop. I have to go out again. How the fuck am I supposed to sleep when I'm waiting for you to email your little friends about our date? I stop at the deli and pick up Cheerios and milk because Benji deserves a treat too. I'd whistle if I knew how, and I enter the shop and trot down the stairs and find Princess Benji pouting and picking at his fingernails. I can tell by one glance at Dr. Sleep that he hasn't even opened it. I'm a professional. I slide the Cheerios to him through the drawer along with a pillow. How nice am I, right? But the princess sniffs the bowl and backs off. Is that almond milk? Just read your book and eat, I say. The test will be on the first 100 pages. Go. I trot upstairs and sit down for a nice long Beck sesh, which consists of listening to Rare and Well Done, looking at pictures of you I stole from Facebook, watching scenes of Pitch Perfect on mute. I get so lost in you that it gets bright in the shop, and I should be tired given all the drinks, all the excitement, but I'm high on you, and I want to take you to the London that Bowie sings about in the album you love. But what I have to do right now is go back downstairs to see if Benji learned how to follow the directions. What a sight, Beck. He isn't just reading King, he's devouring the new book like a chubby kid with a candy bar. I start to applaud, and of course he drops it and fakes a yawn. I tell him it's time for a test, and he doesn't want a test, no duh. And I tell him it's time for a club soda test. But you said read the King. That's right, and you did. Congratulations. And now comes the sissy rant. He doesn't want a club soda test because he has a stomach ache and a headache and he thinks he's allergic to something in the books and he needs a Band-Aid. Is this camp, asshole? And a B vitamin and a cream for his eczema, which is aggravated by the cheap coffee. Of course the milk is from a cow tit, Benji. And he's tired and he doesn't want to be tested anymore. It's time to get started, Benji. I need more time. I'm telling you, I'm intolerant of dairy. The cereal is like poison, he tells me. Club soda will settle your stomach. Please, he begs. You never read On the Road either, did you? He doesn't say anything. And I'm shaking my head, and I feel like calling Yale fucking university and telling them that their product is bullshit. I'm not a bad person, he says. Of course you're not. And you know, Beck, he's not an asshole. He's just so fucking insecure, he has to drop the king he loves. I give him another shot. So how's that king? Eh, he says, and he still hasn't learned a thing. I line up three identical red solo cups, each full of club fucking soda, on a tray. You didn't read Brief Interviews, and every day there's a test. I have serious money, Joe. Family money. I have a car, a mint Alfa Romeo. Do you want a car? Because I can get you a car. I pull the drawer open and lift the cups off the tray and into the drawer. Gently, Joseph. One by one. All right, Benji. It's time to get started. Joe, wait, don't do this. He falls to his knees. I mean it. I have money. He really is an idiot and can't read a situation, and I almost feel sorry for him. And I motion for him to stand, and he stands. Good dog. Benji, I'm not drugging you. Thank God. This is a test. Each cup contains club soda, I explain. And you're going to take a sip from each cup, and then you're going to tell me which cup has home soda. We're going to see if you recognize your own product. He crosses his arms. I need something to cleanse my palate. I'm a step ahead, and I reach into my bag and pull out a stale bagel. Were all three bottles opened at the same time? Club soda changes as it's exposed to air. They were, Benji. I need glass cups, because plastic interferes with the chemistry. Drink. I hand him the first cup, and he takes it, and closes his eyes, and gargles, and swishes, and I want to smash his head into the cup. He spits it in the piss pot, and stretches, and walks around. You know, my father has access to a jet. I can get you anywhere in the world. I can get you anywhere, and then we can forget this ever happened. He'd never even know it was gone. He expects me to blow money. I mean, that wouldn't raise a red flag at all. Bite the bagel, Benji. Thailand, France, Ireland, you could go anywhere, everywhere. Bite the bagel. He bites the bagel, and I pick up the second cup. Joe, please, think about what you want here. Take the cup. The test still isn't valid because the yeast from the bagel compromises my taste buds, and I should gargle with salt water. I never raise my voice, so it scares him pretty good when I do. Take the fucking cup! He falls on his knees, the fucker, and he's probably over-identified with the title character in Dr. Sleep. Ignorant Benji probably doesn't even realize that Dr. Dan Torrance is a character that originated in The Shining, a character that struggled, and Benji's never worked a day in his life, not really, probably made it halfway through The Shining and turned on the movie and never even held an axe. Benji is not a real man. You can't call what he does work. Stand up. Salt water, I'm begging you. They don't give salt water out in those Coke and Pepsi tests. Do you know what distinguishes club soda from seltzer and sparkling water? I groan. It's salt, Joe. Sometimes it's sodium bicarbonate, other times it's sodium citrate or disodium phosphate. Just drink it, Benji. You're not bullshitting your way out of a test. I'm not bullshitting you, he says. No bullshit this time. This is what I know. Drink it. He sips. He gargles. This isn't my product. I ignore his calls to find out if he passed or failed and walk up the stairs. Suspense is good for people. It makes us stronger. This is why America loves Stephen King so much. He keeps us on the edge of our seats until it hurts. He also knows that all people, whether groundskeepers at Fenway or privileged young fucks, are capable of going insane if placed under the right circumstances. Stephen King would appreciate my work with Benji, and I smile as I lock the door. The deli around the corner has salt, and they have mason jars, and I stock up on both. The guy at the deli is cool and gives me a box, which makes the walk back to the shop easier. The more time I spend on this club soda project, the less surprised I am to know that a few idiots buy into home soda. And the more time I spend with Benji, the more I understand why a million other rich idiots don't buy into it. Home soda will never be as popular as Stephen King. You win over consumers by showing you understand them, and you can't market a product if you don't understand the potential buyer for said product. Benji doesn't know shit about marketing. Coke has tried every marketing strategy known to mankind. That's why Coke is hip and classic, original and new, and dietetic and caloric. Coke is wild-eyed J-Lo's favorite, and it's also the whitest, blandest American drink we got. It's a contradiction. It's fucking genius. And Coke spent a shitload of money to be everything to everyone. Your boyfriend Benji's got it all wrong. He thinks it's all about being special, scientific. But you don't get anywhere in this world unless you know how to blend in. Gargle, I tell Benji when I get downstairs. He gargles like he's at the dentist, and it's not like I'm not trying to give him a chance. I think most pricks deserve a shot at being something other than a prick. For instance, I know that Benji was, quite literally, spoiled by his family. Raised by a mother who never said no, and a father who never said boo, and a series of nannies who quietly let the little fucker do whatever he wanted. He told me all this shit the second night in here, the night he failed the quiz on Gravity's Rainbow, and admitted to paying for every essay he ever wrote at Yale. He said he read the first 5 pages of the book and loved it so much that he couldn't read anymore. He said he's too sensitive to read, too moved, that he's built for small doses. For someone so fucking sensitive, he sure does take a long time to gargle the salt water. "Drink it, Benji," I command. He pinches his nostrils and sips, and I don't know what I'm going to do with him. This kid who was never grounded or beaten or locked up for any sin he ever committed. He cheated his way through college, and he's trying to make a living by cheating pretentious fucks with his upmarket soda. Now, for the first time in his life, Benji is being held accountable. Accountability suits him. He's got wrinkles, and he doesn't look like such a pansy. He's not perfect, obviously. He still crosses his legs like he's Woody fucking Allen. He blows his hair out of his eyes, still a pansy after all these tests. Which cup was home soda? It doesn't fucking matter, because I'm selling a vibe. I'm selling health and wealth. It always matters. Any idiot can tell Coke from Pepsi. That's different. Which cup was home soda? How do I even know you're telling me the truth? Because I'm not a fucking liar. You'd never actually kill me, he says, trying again to have the authority. He thinks I'm the kind of sap who wants to be seen by the all-knowing wealthy pussy. I'm not having it. I make that clear and I continue. Which cup was home soda? You're too smart to kill me, he says, belligerent. You know someone like me. I have parents that are going to find out what happened. You'd never really do that to yourself. I don't say anything. I know the power of silence. I remember my dad saying nothing, and I remember his silences more vividly than I remember the things he said. Benji starts to shake, and he picks up cup one again. But his hand is shaking, and when he brings the cup to his mouth, most of it rolls down his chin and onto his Brooks Brothers shirt. I can't get over how many people miss this guy, how many people love him. You should see his email, Beck. He disappears for 3 days, and everyone in the world acts like he's Ferris fucking Bueller. The emails pour in. Where are you? How are you? Are you okay, guy? I don't respond to any of these people. They need to understand that Benji has gone off the rails. Don't they see his tweets? In any case, it's an indictment of our society, this outpouring of curiosity for this liar's whereabouts. Whoever distributes love in this world is doing a bad job. The beloved Benji bites the bagel and I scroll through your phone to calm my nerves. You didn't email anyone about our night yet, which means you're still busy with your pillow, or passed out wasted. And he sips from cup two, and he gargles, and he spits. Definitely not cup two, he says, and he's so obviously trying to cheat, trying to get a hint out of me. I ignore him. You gotta ignore people until they get in line. Especially spoiled rich kids. When I was in this cage, I was good. I didn't fuss and shake like a little girl. He picks up cup three. Salut, he says. And somehow that's the most offensive thing he's ever said. He's not Italian. What right does he have to say salut? He takes a sip and licks his lip, strokes his chin, and paces around the cage. Well, you know, these aren't ideal circumstances for a taste test. Life isn't always ideal, not for most people. The air is dank, musty. Which cup was home soda? One, two, or three? He clings to the bars and shakes his head, and he's crying. Again. I check your sent mail. It's 9 a.m. after our date, and you are awake. I know this because you have just written to some dude in your class about how much you liked his story. I breathe. You have to do that kind of thing. That's just about school. Benji, which fucking cup? He lifts his head and backs away as if he's going to pass out. Yeah, right. And he wipes his eyes and crosses his arms and spits out, none of them! That's your answer? He grabs at his shaggy blonde hair that's darker every day, sweat. Wait! Either that's your answer or it's not. They all tasted like shit, okay? They all tasted like bottom-of-the-barrel 99-cent store chemically-enhanced club fucking soda. You're setting me up to fail. This is wrong. This is injustice. Is that your answer? Yes. Sorry, Benji. I say, and his lower lip shakes. But you're wrong. They're all home soda. You get an email. The asshole in your class. Thanks, Beck. I'm reading you right now. This is your best yet. Nice, very nice. Benji flares. No! And who is this pretentious asshole? I'm reading you? The fuck he is, Beck. Come on, write to Hannah, write to Lynn. You had the best date ever, and you're gonna email with some hack from class? Joe, there's no way those were mine. Well, they were, I say, and now Benji isn't just Benji. He's everyone bad, all the educated liars. It's called quality control, and if you knew anything about business, you'd know that if you don't have quality control, you don't have anything. He sits down and crosses his legs, and I can't help but feel bad for the kid. The world failed him and didn't prepare him for adulthood. Now he's jammed up with a tear-stained shirt and a belly full of club soda and cow milk. His blonde hair and his vocabulary have finally let him down. He speaks. So what now? But he doesn't deserve an answer. He failed his test. I shut off the lights and walk up the stairs. And he rants about needing light, and it's obvious he's hooked on King. And you're firing emails at this dude, and all I want is a Coke in a can and a text from you. I turn around and give him his fucking light. He's gonna read a whole book for once in his life. Chapter 12. There's this girl I fired a couple of years ago. Her name was Sarah, which was irritating. Her birth name was Sarah, but she wanted to be original and all that bullshit. Sarah was a nightmare. She acted like she was doing us a favor by showing up. She suggested Meg Wolitzer books to everyone, even old Asian men. When she had to give change, she reluctantly offered a light fist of coins and made the customer reach over the counter to get it. People hated Sarah. She ordered lattes extra hot and left at least 3 times a week to go back to Starbucks and complain, even though an extra hot latte is obviously not going to be extra hot after a 10-minute walk in the cold. She had dreadlocks, even though she was white. She kept a book on the counter to make sure that everyone knew that she was reading Edwidge Danticat or whatever of the moment minority woman everyone was supposed to be so jazzed up about. And she read The New Yorker, which meant 98.9% of her small talk while cleaning up started with, "Did you see that piece in the New Yorker?" She never flushed the toilet when she peed, claiming her parents taught her to conserve, but her pee reeked because she was a vegetarian who lived mostly on asparagus. She wore bullshit eyeglasses and had a boyfriend in med school, and when she was at the counter, she always curled up and wrapped her body in a shapeless wool cardigan, which made customers feel that they were imposing on her. When I fired her, I left her a note that her last check was in the bathroom, and I left her check in the toilet full of her asparagus-scented piss. She never came around again. She works for a non-profit and married the doctor, who must be the second most annoying person on planet Earth simply because he married her. In terms of sheer annoyance, nobody I have ever known has compared to Sarah Worthington. Savor of the environment, native of Portland, Maine, forever wishing that she were from Portland, Oregon. Bitch should have just moved there. But I envied her, I did. She was so cool. So unflappable. She was never impressed by anything. We'd get assigned James Joyce and she'd shrug. She made me too aware of myself. I hated that I wanted to impress her, and I hated that I was so easily impressed. Sniffing the dead ink on the James Joyce. I'm impressed right now, in this cab with you. I couldn't believe it when you wanted to take me to a party at your friend's house. It feels early for friends, but you insisted. And I'd be nervous no matter what because I'm not a party person, but I'm doubly anxious because we're not just going to some random house. We're riding uptown to your friend Peach Salinger's house. The cab jostles us, and we're not used to cabbing together. And I'm trying to relax, but you're not the girl from the corner bistro. I'm also damn proud of my work with Benji. Mr. Mooney and Curtis have no idea. And I don't want to accidentally start bragging about what a good manager I am. So I gush like some starry-eyed loser. Salinger. That's something. Yeah, you say, too cool. She's related to him, it's like that. Sarah wouldn't be nervous about going to a Salinger party. but I'm rattled with nerves. I can't believe I'm about to meet one of J.D. Salinger's relatives. On our second date, no less. When I called you to set up a second date, I planned on whisking you uptown to the planetarium where we'd make out on the back row. But you cut me off. I have a party, you said. Want to come? I said yes. I'd go anywhere with you. But the closer we get, the more nervous I am. I'm scared everyone will hate me, and you are scared everyone will hate me. I can tell, Beck. You're fidgeting, a lot. And when I'm nervous, I get nasty. It's a problem. So, is J.D. her uncle? Nobody calls him that, you say. When you are nervous, you get nasty too. So, how are they related? It's just a known thing, you sigh. We don't ask. He was so private. I breathe, and I have to remember how you described me in an email to Peach today. Different. Hot. You invited me to a party because I'm different. Hot. But what if I fuck it all up? I feel more insecure with every passing block. We are going to Woody Allen Land, where I've always wanted to live. I sell Salinger, and your friend is Salinger, and you are still putting on makeup even though I have already seen you. You've been smearing black shit under your eyes since 14th Street, and I'm the one who should be gearing up for a battle. I have a tough time with college people, let alone brown people. You scowl at the driver. I said Upper West Side, not Upper East Side. You have a Prada bag and a glare, and I feel like I picked up the wrong Beck. You must be psychic because you blush, defensive. I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound bitchy, I'm just nervous. Phew, I tease you. Me too. I'm worried your friends won't like you. You get a kick out of me, and you give up on whatever it was you were searching for in your purse and start talking to me. You don't just tell a story, you live it. When you tell me about your favorite birthday party ever, which was when your dad let you and two friends take the ferry to the mainland to see Love Actually and you met a guy, I learned that I am capable of envying a 13-year-old boy. Talking to you is like traveling through time, and you sigh. He meant a lot to me. You still know him? You smile at me. I was referring to Hugh Grant. I'll fucking kill Hugh Grant. Ah. You know, Joe, Hugh Grant works in a bookstore in one of his movies. No shit, I say. And I won't kill Hugh Grant. We're about to kiss. I can feel it. But your phone buzzes with a text. It's Peach, you say. If I don't respond right away, she freaks out. Is she as crazy as Uncle J.D.? You don't laugh at my joke. And Peach better know how lucky she is to have you. Now she's calling, as if you had to respond to her text. We're almost there, you tell her, and then I hear her scream into the phone. You are not a we, Beck. You get off the phone and our vibe is off. You don't laugh when I say that J.D.'s niece seems like a piece of work. No, Joe, she's not his niece. I don't like the way you say my name. And I should shut up, but I don't. My instinctive hatred of Peach is winning. I just don't get it. You're such good friends, and she doesn't tell you how she's related to one of the most famous writers in the world? It's a boundaries thing. You're pushing me away on our second date, even though I'm different, hot. You're afraid of love, and it's sad, and I don't want to walk into a room full of strangers. But we are here, and I am your escort. The doorman opens the cab door, and you let him help you out. I wanted to do that. Come on, you say. I don't want to be late. If Peach hadn't called, you would have said, we don't want to be late. The elevator is like a reset button, and we agree that it smells like lavender. The walls are papered with flowers, violets, I think. It's an old elevator, and there's a small bench, and we stand side by side and watch the buttons light up as we pass each floor. Penthouse, huh? Yeah, you say, and you shift your Prada to your right shoulder between us. I'm so happy I remembered to switch bags. Peach gave me this bag for my birthday last year. I would have felt terrible if I forgot to bring it. There is no way we are going to talk about purses before we have sex, so I pretend to be curious. Did Peaches go to Brown, too? It's Peach, you say, and you lick your finger and smudge your eyeliner. You're nervous, and the elevator is slow, and why can't we just hit the red button and stay? Ah, it's never Peaches. you say in a tone so serious you'd think we were talking about politics. Well, actually, that's not true. Her middle name is Isabella, so sometimes we joke around, you know, Peach is... Uh-huh. You get it? Is being short for Isabella? I look at you because I know that you think I'm different, hot. I don't ask permission to touch you, but I raise my hand to your cheek and rub off a speck of makeup with my thumb. You swallow. You smile. Your pupils are fat with desire. I look away first. I got you. Anyway, you say, she's an old friend. Her family summered on Nantucket, and we met when we were kids.